Ozzy, you're the architect of this team, you and your staff, and you guys put this together. Just your thoughts on the kind of football team you guys have, because your depth was severely tested all year.
Well, you know, I think this team, I think John has used the word resolve, has a lot of resolve. And I think you saw that with those first four games in 17 days. That was a tough stretch. John did a very good job at his staff preparing the team for that stretch. But you could see the resolve that the team had. You know, they never blinked during those first 4 weeks. And we were able to come away, I think, 3-1. So I think the resolve of the football team, I think we got outstanding leadership on our team. And I think what they do in the locker room is we have a mentoring program where some of the veteran players actually, you know, take and spend a lot of time with our rookie players. So we got great leadership also.
See, I think a lot of people can see differences between this team and the 2000 team. What do you think has similarities? I mean, have you seen similarities between those two?
Well, I think, you know, when I would talk with Brian about that, and he said, Ozzy, those last 4 or 5 weeks of the season going into the playoffs, anything I asked that team to do, they would do. And I think John would say the same thing. You know, the way the team has responded to John and his coach's leadership, you know, of how he's asked them to practice, you know, the different things like that, how he wants them to prepare, I think that has been very similar as to the way it was in 2000.
Ozzy, the move to get rid of Cam Cameron, obviously a tough call at the time, but, you know, it was a move that obviously paid off. But what was your role in it? How was the discussion with John?
Well, we used to call it the barbershop, but now we call it scrimmage. John and I, we talk about everything. And what I try to do is help John look at the downside and the upsides of every decision. And when I have to make a decision, John do the same thing for me. What's the upsides on us making a trade or giving away a draft pick or something like that? And what's the downsides of not having a Jerry Johnson on our football team? You know, so what we try to do is to look at the upside and the downside. And that's what I do for John. I try to paint the picture so that he can have as much information that he has so he can go about making that decision. And it came down to when he walked into my office and told me he was going to make that decision, he had a piece about himself. And that's all I could ask for him. I said, he said, yes, I think this is the right thing to do.
With the depth on defense being tested so much, were you at all pleasantly surprised with the way guys stepped up like Graham and Ellerbe, or was that something that was expected of them when you brought them in here?
Well, I think with Ellerbe, we saw that he could play a year ago when he got the opportunity. You know, Corey Graham was a guy that we bought in because he was a special teamer. He had been to the Pro Bowl, but when he had played for the Bears, he had played very good football. Corey Graham is one of the better people as a person that I've been around. You know, when he came into this building and this locker room, we got better because of Corey as a person. So, and he wanted an opportunity. And we saw some things during the OTAs and mini camps that he could play. He has the height, weight, and speed that we look for at the position. But then when he got his opportunity, he stepped in. We knew Donnell Ellerbe could play, you know, and it was just a matter of him getting on the field. And I think he was on the field and sub, and Jameel came out early.
As you talked about leadership and mentoring, can you talk about what Ed Reed's meant to the secondary, obviously after losing Ladarius, and just his influence on the secondary this year?
Well, I can say this, and I've been around a few teams. I don't know if any team have more great leaders and great players than we do. And Ed Reed is not only a great player, he's a great leader. I mean, Ed wants to be a coach. So he sees this as an opportunity to start his coaching career by helping those young players come along. But the thing about Ed, he don't just talk about it. He goes out and work the way you have to work to get it done. So, and then you got Matt Burke and you got Vontae. We got some unbelievable leaders on this football team. Anquan Boldin, nobody works harder than Anquan Boldin every day in practice and the way he carries himself. We got unbelievable leaders on this team.
prepared you for being a general manager? Was it your player? Was it talking to Art? Was it other guys? And how proud are you compared to what you did as a Hall of Fame football player, what you've accomplished here?
Well, the preparation, I think, it came when I was asked to stay within the organization. I just asked Mr. Modell, I want to stay on the football side, and he allowed that. But the preparation came from being around Ernie, of course, and Bill Belichick, and being able to listen to those guys those first two or three years and to gain as much education as I could get. We know how great Ernie was, and you've seen how good Bill has been, but being able to learn from both of those guys really helped prepare me. The other thing that I think was so beneficial is that whole group that came over from Cleveland. I was just out. Me, Phil, Schwartzy, Kirk Ferentz, Mike Shepard, Pat Hill, we were all just slappies together. You know, we had all worked together. So when we moved over, it was like, okay, you know what, I have a title, but I'm just one of you guys. Let's go to work. And it was fun.
How proud are you compared to a Hall of Fame career, what you've accomplished here, taking this team to the playoff many times and two Super Bowls?
Well, you know, as a player, that's something that you have to do as an individual. Football is the ultimate team sport. But if you want to achieve, then it's something that has to come from within to get it done. And we see it in Ray Lewis. But from this standpoint, it's not as necessarily about what I can do as an individual. It's about me having a collective group of people around me that see the game, work at the game the same way that I work at, have the same visions and goals that I do. So, as a player, you can go out there and play. I mean, Tiger can go out there and shoot 68 as Tiger. But when you're a general manager, it's not about you. It's about all of the other good people that you have around you that help you and have the same vision and goals that you do.
The way that Mr. Modell kept you with the franchise, how much can you see you keeping Ed Reed? You just mentioned he wanted to be a coach. Yeah. Could you see keeping him on this franchise in that capacity?
Well, you know, that'll be up to Ed Reed. You know, and that'll be something that, you know, Steve and I can talk about. But Ed still got a lot of football left to play. So, you know, and I think we'll cross that hurdle. But anytime, I mean, we got Harry Swain, who was on our last Super Bowl team, and nobody can put a measure of the amount of energy and importance that Harry Swain has in this building and this locker room. So it's important to have some ex-players around. But Ed got a lot of football, and if he decides he wants to do it, I think we can find a way.
Ozzie, can you describe Steve Bisciotti's strengths as an owner and also the enjoyment that you've seen him get out of this room?
Number one, he's a very humble person. He's not afraid to challenge the issues, but he's a very good listener. He has some unbelievable insights when you have a chance to sit and talk with him. And I've had a chance to watch him grow. And I talked to a lot of the other GMs in our business, and they always say to this, Steve had it done the right way. He was able to come in to be a minority owner, to learn and watch, and then become an owner. Some of these other guys not having the opportunity, so therefore they make a lot of mistakes. But, you know, I don't know if there's a more humble, honest, sometimes fiery, guy than Steve Bisciotti. I mean, he enjoys it, but he also believes one thing, that he hires people to do their job, let them do their job. First on Paul, you know, it's tough, and I know you guys have to write every week to evaluate a player in their first week, in their first season, in their second week, or in their second season. But with us, you know, we have 4 years to determine whether a guy can play and whether he can get on the field and be great like Ed or Ray, or he ends up being a guy that in his fourth year blossoms. You know, we have to sit there and watch that. And Paul has been that guy. But you know what? I think the credit goes to Paul. You know what? When I'm around in the weight room, Paul does a lot of the extra stuff on his own. You know, he has decided to become a good player. When a player decides that, that's when they become a good player.
Ozzie,
How special is this weekend for you going to the Super Bowl? You have Jonathan Ogden, you know, potentially getting the Hall of Fame, Art Modell. You have Ray Lewis, the guy you drafted playing. Is this kind of like a culmination for you for what you've tried to build here?
Well, if you know what, when we were all with kids, you always probably had a dream of something when you were growing up. And for the past 15 months, my dream has been having the opportunity to play the Super Bowl in New Orleans. I think New Orleans is the greatest venue to have a Super Bowl. I'm biasing that aspect. I played in two Sugar Bowls there. Matter of fact, I played in the first Sugar Bowl in the Superdome. So I'm really biased about New Orleans as a venue for the Super Bowl. But to know that Jonathan was up and was going to have the opportunity to probably be selected the day before the game, and then for Art, who's now deceased, but also to make it in the top 15, that's been that little dream that the little kids have along the way when they're growing up, that wouldn't that be nice that we're playing in the Super Bowl, and then we got the ultimate, that our ultimate warrior is going to play his last down of football in that game. I don't think you could write a script, but we got a lot of great writers here. I don't think any of you guys could have wrote that script.
Do you feel that in today's NFL, African-Americans have the same opportunities to ascend to leadership positions like GM and head coach as do other races? And why do you think that the number of black head coaches has regressed instead of grown?
Well, you know what? There's the opportunity there, yes. Yes, it is. And you can look at the fact that I think I am the third of the GMs that have been, because Rod Graves had a chance to go with Arizona, and Jerry Reese has been the two. So we've had our opportunity, and then we've had African-American coaches that have had the opportunity. You know what? Would we like for the numbers to be better, and are we going to implement? I've had conversations among the diversity working group committee myself that Commissioner Tagg put me on years ago. Are we going to work to get it better? Yes, but all we can do is to put people in front of people. Mike Tomlin got in front of the Rooneys and got that job. And I can remember way back 18, 19 years ago, and all we was asking for the commissioner and the owners was just to give us the chance to get in front of you. I think that opportunity is there. You know what? What you like? I like for the other African Americans to get an opportunity, but John Harbaugh is a good football coach, and Jim Harbaugh is a good football coach, and Rod Chizinski is a good football coach. So they're not making bad decisions. You know, it's just a good pool of candidates out there that people have to choose from.
What about Caldwell? He's obviously going to be your offensive coordinator next year. But has he received? You know, have you heard about him perhaps getting a job as a head coach again?
One of the nice things of being at the Senior Bowl, I got a chance to be around a lot of the GMs. And I had a couple of GMs to tell me, you know, if it wasn't for you guys' success in the playoff and keep continuing to play and Jim only getting the job, that he would have been someone that we would have interviewed. And, you know, so I can see going forward. Now, hopefully next year we're in the same spot and it can be tough for him to get interviews again. But, you know, I can see him getting that opportunity a year from now.
What sort of thoughts about your push for Art Modell for the Hall of Fame and just why you feel like you should get in?
Well, you know, and I think it all came out when he passed. When you look at what Art has done for this league, was involved in the collective bargaining agreement, involved in the TV deal, involved in the merger, won a championship in 64, won a Super Bowl, have diversity. The first one to hire an African American. I mean, you look at the body of work that Art did, then why shouldn't he be in the Hall? If this game is as good as it is today, and we all think we got a very good game, then Art was a architect of the game. He helped build the game for what it is, and that's why I think he deserves to be in the Hall of Fame.
Hey, I'm going back to the Cam Campbell decision. Uh-huh. It just didn't come out of the blue. John Harbaugh walked into your office. This was something that you probably discussed leading up to that decision, yes?
Yes. Oh, no question about it.
What role did you have in creating that process for him?
Well, we try to have a process in everything we do. We talk about it a lot in the draft. We talk about it a lot in free agency. But it also goes about the process. The process of hiring Jim Caldwell was something that John and I discussed and talked about way before, and why we wanted to do it, you know, and why he wanted to do it. So, it, no, he did not just walk in my office that Monday morning and say that I want to make that move. As a matter of fact, when we got off the bus downtown and we both was driving home from that Redskins game, John and I talked about it that night. You know, the only way, I think I might have to make a decision. He was telling me all the reasons why. So there's a process in place. And what we try to do is we try to minimize the downsides and to maximize the upside. The other thing about that, Sal, is Steve and John know I had already went through that with Brian when Brian fired Jim Fossil. So I had a history of why we did it, what we went through to do it. And so I was able to, okay, well, this is the reason why we did it back then. How does it match up?
I guess what we're trying to get to is, did you and Steve push John
no,
in that direction?
No. That wouldn't be fair to John. John has to stand before his coaching staff and his players. And if at any one point do they ever think that he is overly influenced by Steve or I, that he loses his staff and his players. It has to be him. You know what? He is eager to learn. He's willing to talk about things. One thing about John, he lets you know right away he's not the smartest guy in the room. I've been around people that say every time you see him, they think they're the smartest guy in the room. John doesn't carry himself that way. But I don't know if anybody work as hard as John. You know, and John has a unique talent about him. I don't know how great he is in front of a group, but in a one-on-one setting, there's none better. To watch John operate here in the cafeteria, walking out on the field with a player, in the weight room with a player, and to see him spend 5 or 10 minutes with a guy and how important that is, I don't think you can put a measure on it.
How important is it to have an intimidation factor on defense?
Well, the intimidating factor is they try to run it on you the first 2 or 3 times. You stuff it about 1 or 2 of those times. Then you know what? Then that sends them a message. What we try to do, we've tried to do, is to make sure it's hard for people to drive the football and score. And John and Dean has done a good job of now when they're getting in the red areas, making them kick field goals. You know what? We just try to make it hard on people and try to not to give up anything real easy. I think that's the way we try to be build success on defense. Now, when you got Nada and Suggs and Ray and Ed and Jimmy and all those guys, it makes it a lot easier to do it.
Ozzie, what parallels do you see between Patrick Willis, who's a young criminal linebacker, and Ray Lewis? Do you see some of the same qualities?
But you know, there are a lot of similarities. I think Patrick was bigger coming out, though, you know, than Ray was. I don't know him as personal as I know Ray, but I can say this. If he has anywhere the qualities of leadership that Ray had, then the Yorks and Jim and Trent, they got something special. I'm not discussing that. You know what? I've gone on record. Joe and I have a very good understanding about his contract and where we are in the story.
Ozzie, step one of getting rid of Cam, some would say, would be the first step in getting the offense right. Step two was Brian McKinney at left tackle. Can you talk about how that decision was made, or was it just Ja Reed's belt?
It was just Ja Reed getting injured. That was the only thing that precipitated that change. You know, Ja was coming good. The thing that we can look at, me as a GM guy, you know, as we move forward, we got Ja coming back. We got Ramon Harwood. We got guys that have played 4 or 5 games. We had a chance to see Geno play against Cincinnati. Now, and I know because I have the opportunity to read some of the things. You know, the poor offensive line. We don't have a poor offensive line anymore in Baltimore. We got some good young talent that I think can play together for a lot of years.
On top of that double-edged sword to your job is that, you know, you draft good players, you develop good players, but it's hard to keep them. You can't keep them all. The same goes for your coaches, as you guys year after year seem to get poached. I mean, just talk a little bit about those challenges on a day-in, day-out basis.
Well, I mean, we know. When we knew we were going to lose Rod Woodson, we drafted Ed Reed. I mean, you already can look down the stream. I know what the contract situations is, and number one, I know what our salary cap is. And I can look and say and know that we are not going to be able to retain some players. So that's the reason why we go draft players and they sit around for 2 years and y'all wonder, why is he not playing? Oh, he will play at some point. So I don't have to worry. I worry about winning today, but I got to also worry about winning tomorrow. And I got to be able to balance those books every year.
Go back to the phone call with Ray Lewis when he called you and asked you not to put him on season-ending IR, and what your memories of that phone call was, and how much persuasion he had to do.
Well, he called. He was going to see Uribe in Miami. And he said, you know what, I need to collect all my information. And I told Ray, I said, Ray, I said, the one thing that we have, that's this designation was put in place for someone. It was Mario Williams was the reason why the commissioner at this time last year, Mario Williams, he saw him at the Super Bowl, and Mario told the commissioner, you know, I could have played in the playoffs. And so the commissioner, why can't we allow our marquee players? 8, 9 years ago, that could have been Tom Brady when he blew his knee out. So once we got all of the information, and then we knew, and people were saying 11 weeks, 12 weeks, 10 weeks, but I was saying if anybody can get themselves ready to play sooner, it would be Ray Lewis. And so let's use the designation. You know, it was there for us. The other good thing about that is it was an upper extremity injury. So his, when it's time to lead the game, it's your legs. I still can think as good as any football player, but my legs, I can't move at all. So you know what? It wasn't his lower extremities. And you know what? And he was able to maintain his cardio and all of that. And I don't know if he would have had to play those other 10, 11 weeks, where that body would be right now. But you know what? He had a 10-week break. And now he is getting better and fresher as we go forward.
Ozzie, how impressive have you been with Bernard Pierce and his ability to emerge? And it almost seems like now John has a good problem to have two good backs to get on carries.
Well, I think we've saw in this league now you need two backs. And we're back in here. Wilbur always take the opportunity to go down on the field when the running backs are working. Because he played the game. He's here since he came back, and he said, I'm impressed with this guy, Pierce. And then we put the tape on, the grades come in, and he brings a different dimension. You know, he's a tackle breaker, and he's explosive. You know, so he's a good match to what Ray is, and he was there for us to pick in the third round. And you know what? For him to sit there and be in the meetings with Wilbur and Ray and to be able to learn the importance of protection and all those other things is just very beneficial. You better be, yeah.
Can you talk about the influx and why we're seeing more Polynesian players at the Tigers at Samoa and so in the NFL?
Well, I think it's because of the level of football over in the Polynesian Islands and in Hawaii. I mean, they play very good football over there. And, I mean, if you get someone like Haloti who's 6'5", 6'6", 350 pounds that can move like that, I don't care what he's playing, he's going to be pretty good at it, you know. So, I mean, you know, the guys are getting so much bigger in our league right now, but when they're that big and can move like that, you can find a place for them to play.
Is this fun or is it?
Sure.
You've been close, you know, in recent years. What does it mean to you to be going back and kind of get over that hump and be back in this game?
I said this to John on the bus ride. You just don't know how hard it is to get to the Super Bowl. Now, it's even harder. Now you have to go and win it. But 12 years since we did this, and when we got knocked out in the AFC Championship twice, it's hard. I mean, you got to manage injuries. There's so many different things that you have to manage just to get this opportunity. And the other 31 teams don't care for you. It's hard to do. And so you got to take your hat off to people like Bill Belichick in New England and Pittsburgh that have been so many times. I think you take your hat off to those people. It's really, really hard to get to this point. It's hard. One more, Kevin, okay?
I know it's hard, but do you have fun at your job? And
oh, okay. All right.
I'm sorry, man.
But I know something.
All right, okay.
Do you have fun at the job, and do you envision a time when it's not going to be fun and you'll step away, or are you just going to hang because you love it?
Well, you know, I enjoy it. But what I used to say, boy, it's just so great, and I only do it a couple of hours a day, maybe 3 hours, is watching tape by myself and evaluating players or evaluating the guys that was in the draft last year and seeing how well they do. But I'm enjoying another part of it. My relationship with Shockey Brown right now and Brian Hall, you don't get relationship like that. Well, I'm a buddy to those guys. And to talk with Morgan Cox, do y'all know who Barrett Jones is? He's probably the most decorated offensive lineman that ever came out of Alabama. He's going to be in the draft. And Morgan telling me, you know, I used to drive him to school every day. So it's stories like that that you get a chance to be around these guys. And I've seen Suggs change. And I've saw Ray change. And I've seen it. To watch these guys grow and mature. Evaluating players is one thing. Doing contracts is another. Going down to the principal's office and spend time with Steve, that's another thing. But to be there with those guys and to watch those guys grow up, you can't separate that. You can't find anything better than that. And so I enjoy it.